Speaker, the lady that's going to lead, I've known her since she moved to Erie. We have the same home group. I've seen her through good times, I've seen her through bad times. You know, she shows me her attitude, you know, and she's showing me now how to live one day at a time. With that, I'll give you Julie.
Hi everybody, my name's Julie Wakely, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi Julie.
I am asked to come up here and give my experience, strength, and hope. And I'm going to do that to the best of my ability. I'm just going to warn you in advance that I'm feeling a little weak tonight, so if I have to sit down, I'm just going to sit down and you'll still be able to hear me. So I have a home group, it's the Tuesday Night Harbor Creek Group. I have a sponsor, Marilyn R. I have a sobriety date, June 8th, 1989. Every one of those things has changed. Every one of those things can change again. I'm hoping the sobriety date never does. At this point, it's been a long time, and I really don't want to have to start over again. So my experience, strength, and hope, I always start my lead the same way. I always tell you that, you know, what it was like is that I drank alcoholically and it sucked. What happened is I found Alcoholics Anonymous, and you guys gave me back to God. And what it's like now is my life is fantastic. And I actually do mean that, in spite of the fact that I'm standing up here with oxygen and telling you I might not be able to stand that long. You know, we all know how to drink, so I'm going to do that real quick, because really that's not what's important. If you're in this room and you're an alcoholic as opposed to a support group member, then you know how to drink. But let me tell you a little bit about my drinking, and that is I grew up in an alcoholic home. My mother is a self-proclaimed alcoholic, so I can say she is. She joined Alcoholics Anonymous in 1985, stopped going to meetings in 1990, and is the definition of untreated alcoholism. She's one of the reasons. She's one of the inspirations to continue to go to meetings after all the years. But anyways, I was a pretty decent kid, you know, I did what I was supposed to do, you know, when I was a little kid, and I always felt a little bit different. There was a fairly significant age difference between my parents, and it kind of made me feel a little bit different, just a little bit, and then my dad got sick, and when I was 12 years old, he passed away, and died of this horrible disease of cancer. If you've ever been in a home watching someone die of cancer, it takes a toll on the whole family. And I was daddy's little girl. He was up on a pedestal for me. I probably had 15 or 20 years of sobriety before I could consider my father just a man. You know, he was like up on this pedestal. He was like this godlike creature to me, in part because he was gone so soon, you know. And also in part because my mother and I, from the day I was born, have been oil and water. And that has been confirmed by virtually all of my family members. When my dad died, my mom fell into a bottle of alcohol and she really took off with her alcoholism. He died in April and she was in rehab in October. She did the 30 days, which is where I first was introduced to the concept of alcoholism as a disease, alcoholism as a family disease, all of those things. And she was drunk by Christmas. She managed to do that for about 4 more years, and in December of 1985, she got sober. And she hasn't found it necessary to take a drink since then. And I talk a little bit about my mom's alcoholism because it really plays into some of what was going on with me. And here's what some of that stuff was. I already told you I was daddy's little girl, and there were some things that happened around my father's passing that really gave me some negative stuff that I really started, first place I started to really learn how to stuff. My dad was taken by ambulance into the hospital, I want to say on a Tuesday, I'm not 100% sure about that, but I wanted to go see him. And back in the 80s, you could not, it was 1980 when he died, you could not just take kids to the hospital. You had to get special permission. And so my mom arranged to take us into the hospital to see my dad on Monday. and he died on Sunday. And I didn't ever get that closure. You know, when they called the ambulance, they brought his kids out of the house, so we didn't see him take them, and I didn't get to say goodbye to him. And then at the funeral, a similar thing happened. At the end of the viewing, they took us kids out and let my mom say her goodbyes, and we just didn't get that chance. And that kind of started to play into some of those negative feelings. And you know, I got to a point before I got into this program where all I knew was negativity. There was nothing positive in my heart, my soul. There was nothing positive about me at all when I got here. I followed my mom into that bottle of alcohol pretty quickly. My dad died in April, smoked my first cigarette in May, took my first drink of alcohol in June, and started experimenting with other substances in July. The best I can tell you about my drug use is that it happened. It got me here sooner, probably, but my drug of choice is vodka. I am a pure alcoholic. I am an alcoholic, no question about it. I even tried the marijuana maintenance program for a little while when I came in here, and yeah, that doesn't work. You can't, I won't say you, I can't be an alcoholic in recovery while taking any mind or mood altering substances. And I have to tell you that was really hard for me. I am 2 years into a pretty strong battle against cancer, and I have to take some fairly strong pain medication, and this has been a struggle for me from a sobriety standpoint. And I know that I am not relapsing, and I know that what I'm doing is what I have to do from the perspective of what my doctors are telling me to do, but I struggle with it a little bit because I don't like it. I don't like to have to do that. So here's my drinking in a nutshell. I'm a pig drinker. I'll drink anything you give me. I'll take anything you give me. All I want to do is get out of myself. I want to be in la-la land as fast as possible. I'm a blackout drinker, so I'm not going to remember anything I said or did. I'm probably not even going to remember that I was with you. And I'm going to wake up tomorrow morning, I'm going to be sick as a dog, and I'm going to do it again. And that pretty much tells you my sobriety, or my alcoholism. I took that first drink in 1980, and I very, very quickly progressed. You know, the big book talks about the fact that we don't necessarily have to drink long, and that's particularly true for women. And I can tell you in the 9 years that I was active, I crossed that line. I don't know when, but there came a point when I could no longer make any decisions once I took that first drink. And there were times that I couldn't even make the decision not to take the first drink. You know, I remember one night, this was real close to the end of my drinking, and my whole life is pretty much shattering around me, and I know what the problem is, you know. We know what the problem is long before we get here. We're just not willing to admit it or do anything about it, right? So I go to this party, and I intentionally take no money, no alcohol, no drugs, no nothing. I'm just going to go to this party, I'm going to see my friends for an hour, and I'm going to go home. I don't want to get drunk today. I'm not going to get drunk today. I left in a blackout, and that pretty much is how I live the 80s, you know? The 80s are a blur for me. If you really want more of a drunk a lot, come see me afterwards, because what I really want to talk about is what happens once I was given the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I need a drink first.
That one for me.
That was good.
So, my mom got sober. And about 18 months later, she had a party at our house. Now, mind you, there's a whole bunch of stuff I left out, so I guess I got to talk about it real quickly, and that is that I would take care of my sister because my mom was incapable. She was the kind of alcoholic that was not there. If she was physically there, she was probably passed out. My sister and I used to regularly pick her up and pour her into bed. So I took care of the household. I took care of my sister. I took care of the house. They made sure everything was okay. What my mother did, you know, today, then I hated her guts. Today, looking back, my mother kept us in a house in the suburbs. And there was always food in the cupboard. You know, she did the best she could with what she had. But I learned how to stuff those feelings and how to take care of my sister and how to just, I was in charge. Like, I ran the show. I was in charge of everything. And I didn't have to answer to anybody, because my mom wasn't there to answer to. And So she comes into Alcoholics Anonymous, and she wants to be mom again. You know, we come into this program, and we all have a tendency to do this, right? We come into this program, and we get a month of sobriety underneath us, and wow, look at me. I've been sober a month. I can be who I should be. You know, why aren't you listening to me? Why haven't you forgiven me for everything? You know, it took a really long time to burn those bridges, and it took a really long time to build them back up. This alcoholic for sure thought that everything was going to be, you know, I wanted 5 years of sobriety in 5 months, and that doesn't happen. You have to earn it. And you know, I just want to say for the record that I don't believe that time really has much of a meaning. Basically, all I have over somebody that has less time than me is a number. The only place it really means anything is before you work the steps, right? When you're a brand new person and you really don't know anything. But the reality is that time doesn't mean anything. The program that you work is what means something. You know, I can have 30 years of sobriety and do absolutely nothing, do no step work, sit in my house and stare at a wall, and I'm going to be miserable. And I don't choose to do that today. I choose to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and to apply the steps of this program into my life every day so that I can continue to live happy, joyous, and free and not be that dry drunk my mom is. And that's a choice. That's a choice. And I look around this room and I see a lot of people in this room with 20 plus years. And I see a lot of people in this room that I love very dearly, that I know came out tonight just to see me. And I can tell you that when I was drinking, there weren't three people that would come out to support me. And so I want to thank you all for coming out tonight. I was a little overwhelmed when I walked in and saw some of you. I didn't walk around because I needed to save my energy, but thank you for being here. So anyways, my mom has this picnic and all of her old stupid AA friends are going to be there. And I like to talk about the old stupid people because people like, you know, 40. I was 19, mind you. So like when you're 40, you're like ancient, right? I'm 47 now and I do not feel old. And they were stupid just by virtue of the fact that they were my mother's friends. You know, like they had real jobs and educations and stuff. They were not stupid people. They were just, you know, my mom's old stupid AA friends. So they're coming over, and I hate AA, you know, because my mom now wants to be in charge of my household, and I'm not having any of that, and it's really messing with my drinking. But we go. You know, my mom very rarely asked us to do anything to support her, but we went. I run across the photo album from that picnic every once in a while, and it brings back a lot of really good memories. When my daughter was in town here in November, we looked at that, and it was pretty cool, because that picnic marks the beginning of my journey. It really does. I drank that day, obviously. I wasn't not drinking. But at that picnic, we were asked if we would attend a meeting with my mother on that Monday. And it was one of the guys at the picnic who actually was, I know every time I say this, I feel like I'm going to offend somebody, who actually was old. And he was going to speak. He was going to celebrate 25 years of sobriety, and he was going to speak. And my mom asked us if we would go. She was going to present him with his 25-year pin, and then he was going to share his experience, strength, and hope. And for whatever reason, we decided that we would go with her, and that was on Monday night. And so on Monday night, we went with my mom to this meeting, and I was sat way in the back, you know, up against the wall back there. Some of you are sitting back there because there weren't other seats, but some of you are sitting back there to hide like I used to. So we sat way in the back of the room, and this guy comes up, and he starts to tell his story. And at the risk of offending anybody, he was in his mid to late 70s. He was about this tall. Spoke with a super heavy Boston accent. And there was absolutely, positively nothing I had in common with this man other than the disease of alcoholism. And he came up to the podium and he started to tell his story. And his story talked about those things that happen to alcoholics who drink alcoholically for many years. And he talked about losing houses, and he talked about losing cars and marriages and businesses. And he talked about doing time in jail, and he talked about doing time in a mental institution. And he talked about doing those things that just happen to us. And I don't mean that, you know, happenstance. When we drink, that's where we end up, right? That's what happens by the choices we make. And none of those things had ever happened to me. Not a one. But he also talked about those feelings. The feelings that an alcoholic has. He talked about that feeling of intense loneliness. Walking into a room with as many people in it as are in this room right now and feeling completely alone. He talked about that, those feelings of guilt, even when you have absolutely nothing to be guilty about. He talked about those feelings of utter remorse and those feelings of hating yourself and the things that the Big Book talks about. And I had every one of those. And for whatever reason, I know it's God, but for whatever reason, I heard that message that night. And what I heard was, you're an alcoholic, and you can get sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and maybe you can have a better life. And so I started going to Alcoholics Anonymous. I jumped into this program with both feet, and I did every single thing you guys wanted me to do that I agreed with. I wasn't doing none of that God business. That's the side of the program that I'm not looking at. I don't want nothing to do with that God business. That staying out of relationships thing, that's for you old people. Female sponsor? Forget about it. I'm not talking to no woman about nothing. So what did I do exactly? There's a couple things I didn't do correctly. I got a home group. Almost immediately upon coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, it was the Wednesday Night Living Sober Group in Kenmore, New York. And I never missed that meeting. I got active in that meeting. I was taught early on that, you know, this, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is the 12 steps. But there is a lot more to AA than just the 12 steps. I can't be happy, joyous, and free without the 12 steps. But I also need to be involved in service work. I need to give back to what was so freely given to me. And I need to have fellowship because I need to understand that there are people just like me out there. And I need to have people in my life that I can reach out to when I need something. There's a lot of pieces of this. And this alcoholic needs all of those pieces, all of them. And so I got involved in service work pretty early on. And I got hooked up with a group of people. And I started hanging out with this group of people. They were old, man. They were like 35 to 45. They were boring. I used to drag them all over the place. Like, if I'd need a lawn feet, and I'd drag them to the, you know, fireman's carnival, or I'd make them go bowling, or I'd make them go out for coffee after the meetings. Like, I'm this, first of all, y'all know what a newcomer looks like, right? You can pick out the newcomer in the room. They're the one bouncing in their seat, you know, hit the coffee 12 times. They can't sit still for a whole hour, right? So I had that going on. Plus, I'm 19. And so, you know, I'm not sitting still. Like, I got to do something. And I'm not, yeah. So these poor people, I don't know how they tolerated me. But they did. And I found out later that the only reason why they started talking to me is because I was Carol's kid. Because generally speaking, they didn't really like young people. Can't imagine why. In their experience, most young people didn't really want to get sober. You know, I envy the young people that come into the program today because there are a lot of other young people here. You know, on New Year's Eve, I had the pleasure of stopping over at Cassie's house. And while I can only take Cassie and her friends for so long. I think it's fantastic that there's this incredible group of young people with the energy and the love of this program, you know? And wow, what a gift these young people have to have each other. There's a couple other people in this room that got sober real young that know what I'm talking about. And, you know, I think it's absolutely great that we have all these young people today and that they can be there for each other. I didn't have that. The few young people that had any level of sobriety in my town weren't people you wanted to spend time with. So I got to hang out with old people. But you know, I did that. I changed my people, places, and things. I just couldn't do the getting in touch with a woman thing. I just couldn't do it. you know, today I understand all the reasons for it, and I really talk to my girls about it, and, you know, any woman that wants to talk about why it is that we have to stay with women, come see me after the meeting. I'll be happy to talk to you about that. You know, I understand all the reasons for it now. Back then, I didn't care. I really didn't. And so I got to tell you about the gentleman that I picked to be in a relationship with. He was fantastic. He was young, of course. Had to pick a young guy. His story goes something like this. He was a year older than I was, and he had been in and out of the program for 4 years already. He could never put together more than 2 months of sobriety. But he was cute. Right? What else do you need? When I first met him, he was on work release. So I used to go visit him in jail, right? I'd go up to the open visitation on Wednesday nights, and then he'd come out on the weekends and work, and then he'd go back into jail. And then on the day he got out of jail, my mom invited him over for dinner. My mom was just as sick as I was, clearly. My mom invited him over for dinner, and we started our illustrious, fantastic relationship. I want to tell you a little bit about that. I have nothing to give. Nothing. You know, nothing magic happens at day 365. I just don't believe that. Stay out of a relationship for a year. Well, why? Why? Because you got nothing to offer. But that doesn't mean that on day 365 you're going to have something to offer. My experience is that you're not going to have anything to offer until you have worked the steps of the program. Period. I didn't have anything to give until I worked the steps of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was a broken shell of a person with virtually no emotions. And that, of course, is one of the hardest things, right? When we start to get those emotions back and we have to start feeling, who wants to do that? That's why we drank in the first place. But I didn't even understand those feelings. Like, the only ones I recognized were anger and guilt. I didn't even recognize the other emotions. I didn't know what it meant to be sad. I didn't know what it meant to be happy. I just didn't understand them, you know? So I start seeing this guy. I blow through like 4 or 5 female sponsors. I did have a gentleman, his name is Chuck, and for all intents and purposes, he was my sponsor. And I will tell you, I do not recommend that you have a sponsor of the other gender, not when there's enough gender people now. I mean, early on the women had to have men sponsors because there were no women, but that's not true today. But what I will tell you about Chuck is he never gave up on me, no matter what. He was always there for me, and if it were not for Chuck, I don't think I'd be standing here. I mean, that's just the honest truth. He helped me more than anybody else in that first couple of years of my floundering around this program when I wasn't willing to do everything that you guys told me to do. So I'm seeing this guy, and I'm still going to meetings. I'm still doing that. Clearly, I'm not praying, and our relationship is not good, really. I have like 11 months of sobriety, and he does what he's always done, and that is he goes out and drinks. And I got really mad at him, so I drank at him. Why? Well, because I didn't have a sponsor, because I didn't have a spiritual foundation, because I was involved in a relationship that I had no business being in, because I wasn't doing what you guys taught me to do. This is actually a very simple program, right? And if you think about it, okay, so even if something magic does happen at day 365, in the grand scheme of things, how long is a year? Really? And I know young people say, I can't wait that long. I know. I was a young person. I do understand that. But you're the only person you're hurting when you make those choices. Unless you're picking somebody who's also new in this program, and then you could maybe hurt them too. So anyways, for the next year or so, this guy and I would come in and out of AA, in and out, in and out, in and out. I never really strayed very far from the program. I was the coffee maker at my home group, and I made coffee every week for that whole year, whether I was drinking or not. If I wasn't drinking that week, I would go to the meeting. If I was drinking that week, you had coffee, but you had to clean up afterwards. I have to tell you that not one person ever told me I wasn't welcome at that meeting. Never was I told, we're done with you. Every single time I was there, Julie, it's good to see you. We're glad you're here. I try very, very hard not to look down on anybody who's reintroducing, even if it is for the 50th time, because this could be the time that they get it. And I never want to be the reason somebody doesn't come back to another meeting. I don't know what God's plan is for these people. Maybe it's that they're a lesson for us. Maybe it's that they're going to get sober someday, you know? I don't know, but I'm not going to be the reason they don't come back. And they were always kind to me. So this relationship is really spiraling out of control, so we moved in together. That's how you fix it, right? You make it worse? I don't see what's wrong with that. It's pure alcoholic thinking. Hello? I cannot tell you what happened. All I can tell you is that there came a day when I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And we had been out drinking, like we always were. The most spectacular, earth-shattering thing I can tell you about that night of drinking is that I remember it. I remember everything that happened that night. And that is not the case for 99% of my drinking. I woke up the next morning and I wasn't going to do it anymore. So we started going back to AA. And when the time came to drink again, what I did is I packed up everything I owned into my tiny little Chevelle hatchback and drove to a meeting and said, I can't do this anymore. And Chuck's girlfriend let me come live with her because I had burned the bridge with my mom. And I went and moved in with Chuck's girlfriend under condition that I got a female sponsor. You know, I firmly believe with every ounce of my being that God gives us what we need when we're ready to accept it. You know, that Grand Island meeting where that little Bostonian was giving his speech, God wanted me to hear that message, and so I heard it that night. And when it was time for me to get serious about this program, God provided me with the exact right sponsor that I needed. All of a sudden, this woman started appearing at every table that I sat at. She was at every meeting that I went to, and she had awesome things to say. She was really spiritually grounded, and she had everything I wanted, everything. And so I asked her to be my sponsor, and I found out that she had been out of town. She had been living out of town for about 5 years and had just moved back. And when I was ready for a sponsor, God gave her to me. And over the next couple of years, her and I started actually working a program of Alcoholics Anonymous. But see, I don't really listen very well. And I don't always learn from my mistakes. So I might have gotten involved with another guy. It could have happened. I waited until I had like 9 months of sobriety, right? And so I got 9 months of sobriety and I got involved with this guy. Now, he was definitely a better choice than the first one. He had like 3 or 4 years of sobriety. He was working a really good program. He was doing a lot of really good things. And so I kind of hooked up with him and kind of got pregnant and may have gotten married. While all of this is going on, I'm like maybe starting to pull away from meetings a little bit. And I'm still talking to my sponsor a little bit, but we really focused on steps 1, 2, and 3. We really didn't do anything beyond that. And I was really, I really struggled with steps 2 and 3. I really struggled with bringing that God into my life. If anybody that really knows me now, you're saying, you really? Seriously? But yeah, I did. My heartbeat today is my relationship with my higher power. And my girls know the very first thing I'm going to say to them when they call me is, did you pray about it? they don't always like that answer. I never liked that answer either. So we're pulling further and further away, and my husband and I are kind of isolated in our house, and this went on for almost 5 years. And I honestly believe that the only reason why neither one of us ever drank was because we weren't going to be the first one to do it. Like, I honestly believe that. My house was by far a dry drunk house. We had these two little babies. I had a full-time job, plus I was going to school at night. He had a full-time job, as well as an undiagnosed mental illness, which made it a little bit difficult as well. And our house just was not a pleasant place to be. It really wasn't. And got two beautiful kids out of the deal, right? And I got Erie out of the deal. I think that was a pretty good trade, personally. You know, my ex-husband is a very, very good man, and I think he's very happy today, which was not the case when we were married. And so, all of a sudden, well, not all of a sudden, he went on a business trip. And while he was gone, I got scared. I got very scared that I was going to drink. And when he came home, I said, I can't do this anymore. I have to go back to AA. I can't live like this anymore. And I started going back to AA. I went to a lot of meetings, and I hooked back up with my sponsor. See, I was afraid to make a phone call when I was at home, and I was scared. So let me tell you, anybody in this room, if you have my phone number, or probably anybody else's phone number, quite frankly, and you are away from this program for a year or 2 years, and you need help, you call me, and I will be on the other end of that phone for you, as will just about anybody else in this room. You don't ever have to be scared to pick up that phone. You know, I remember about, gosh, it has to be 10 years ago now, I got a phone call. To this day, I can't tell you who that person was, but they said, hi, this is so-and-so, I got your number at such-and-such a meeting, and they were in crisis that day, and I was on the phone with them for an hour and a half. And when I got off the phone with them, they went to a meeting and they were okay. Don't know who it was, don't care who it was. You know, God put her in my life at that moment to get me out of me. And she got help too. So anytime that you ever need anything, nobody is going to say, I haven't heard from you in a year, click. They're going to say, how you doing? We missed you. Welcome back. At least if you're talking to the right people, they are. Because not everybody in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous has what I want. And that's not conceited, that's facts. So, moving on, somewhere along the lines here. So, our house is still pretty out of control. And my husband is getting really, really, really unhappy. I'm going back to meetings, I'm getting involved, I started my fourth step, I'm getting happy, I graduated with my associate's degree, like things are good for me, things are horrible for him. So we decided the problem is his job. It's always something external, right? We always point to something external. And so he gets a new job in Erie, Pennsylvania. And so we moved down here. That was 20 years ago. I hadn't worked the steps yet. We moved down here for a fresh opportunity. And I have to tell you that moving to Erie was probably the best thing that ever could have happened. I did not think so at the time I got here. There are people in this room who probably remember when I got here, and I didn't want to be here. All right. So those evil, horrible Northeasters would get on my case about getting a sponsor. Mike. See me in the grocery store. You got a sponsor yet? I'm a sponsor in New York. You don't live in New York. Terry Rose, Denny Wallen, those guys would be merciless with me. But see, I was special. So like, I had this list of criteria, what you had to meet to be honored enough to sponsor the great and wonderful. A long time for that ego to go away. So anyways, I found somebody that met my criteria. And honestly, once again, it was God, because this woman saved my life. I sat down with her and we talked about where I was in the steps. And where I was in the steps was a very scary place. I had worked steps 1, 2, and 3. However, I believe very strongly that the way you follow through on that decision you make in step 3 is to finish the steps. So I had pretty much made the decision but not really taken any action on it. So I really didn't have a relationship with a higher power yet. I was doing a little bit of fake it till you make it, but nothing consistent. And I had a 95% written fourth step that had been sitting in my purse for damn near a year. Let me tell you something, don't ever do that. Because what you do is you scratch up all the crap, and then you hold on to it and you stew on it. I was not a nice person. I was not someone people wanted to be around. So we sat down and we did my fourth and my fifth step. Basically what we did is we started with that written piece of paper that I had, and go figure, all those resentments still existed. Everything that was on that piece of paper was still there a year later. Gee, I wonder why. Oh, I know, because I didn't do anything about it. I hear a lot of people talk in the rooms about steps 4 and 5, and I think a lot of people stop there. There's 12 steps. There's not 5 steps. And I couldn't be happy, joyous, and free until I did all 12 of those steps. And so we sat and we did step, I pulled out that piece of paper and we went through it and made sure that it was updated and we talked about it. And then we went out in her backyard and she gave me 5 hot air balloons and she made me release things to God. What do you need God to take for you today? And it was one of the most powerful experiences that I have ever had in my entire life. And I can tell you that I honestly felt God taking those burdens from me. I will also tell you that I'm not perfect and took some of them back. But I honestly felt them going. You know, I really did. I felt that magic. She was also the first person that I ever really did a third step prayer out loud with. And that was pretty powerful as well because I could feel God in that room. You know, and then I did 6 and 7. I love to talk about 6 and 7. I think 6 and 7 get gypped, man. It's like a paragraph in the big book. But 6 and 7 are really, really important, at least in my world. And that's because I guess the way I interpret 6 and 7 is that, you know, in step 4, we kind of identify all those things about us that are objectionable. And then in 6 and 7, we say, this isn't who I want to be anymore. I want to be somebody different. I want to be who you want me to be, Lord. Please, take these things away from me and give me what you want me to be. Like, that's, to me, what step 6 and 7 is. It's giving a paragraph in the big book. Like, they're 2 of my favorite steps because I don't think that we can become somebody else until we're willing to let go of who we used to be. And so I do some version of the 3rd step, 7th step, and 11th step prayer every day because I still have those character defects, you know? They crop up all the time. I'm not perfect. I'll never be perfect, right? Nobody's perfect. We don't even strive for perfection, right? It's progress, not perfection. You know, and 8 and 9, I did the paying people back and that kind of stuff. But the honest truth is that the vast majority of my amends were living amends, changing who I used to be and being somebody better, you know. Before I came into this program and I worked the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I did not know how to be a daughter, a wife, a mother, an employee, a friend. I didn't know how to do those things. I knew how to take care of number one, uno, me, that's it. I don't care about anybody else. It's not like that anymore. I don't care that much about me at all anymore. You know, so then we move into 10, 11, and 12. And this is like the meat of the program for me. This is, once you get to the point where you started to change who you are, then you get this incredible opportunity to live life to its fullest every day. You know, in step 10, we continue to take personal inventory and make amends, right? So in step 10, every day, I look at my behaviors and my actions, And I say, what did I do today? Where was I selfish? Where was I self-centered? Where did I make mistakes today? What do I have to fix today? And then I fix it as fast as I can. If I can fix it today, I fix it today. If I can't fix it till tomorrow, I fix it till tomorrow. But I don't wait a month. I fix it as soon as I possibly can. You know, and then I talk to my higher power. And I trust implicitly in whatever that higher power has for me to do today. And in step 12. Hello, step 12. Most people don't read it the correct way. Step 12 says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. The result. Not a result. Not one of the results. The result. There is no spiritual side to Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a spiritual program. The entire program is designed to bring us closer to our higher power, whoever that is. I don't care who your higher power is. I don't care if you are Christian or Jewish or Muslim or Buddhist or who you are. I don't care if your higher power is, you know, the universe, the ultimate power in the universe. It doesn't matter. All that matters is that you have one. It doesn't have to be mine. I don't care who your higher power is, but you have to have one. And the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous are designed to bring us closer to that higher power so that we can live our lives emulating that higher power and bringing all of the good into the world that we're taught in this program, right? Because we carry the message to the other alcoholic, right? That's the easy part of step 12. That's standing up here at the podium. That's sharing at a meeting. That's sponsoring people. That's easy. There ain't no, that's easy. Anybody can do that. Practicing these principles in all my affairs is the hard part. What I'm being asked to do is to be unselfish at work, to not have road rage, to not want to kill somebody in the grocery store, to be nice to my spouse. That's what I'm being asked to do. I'm not being asked to, here, let me show you through the steps. I'm being asked to live my life as close to godlike as I can. And I didn't know what other word to use besides God there. Please don't take offense to it. That's what I'm being asked to do. And, you know, when I came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a punk-ass 19-year-old brat. Today, I'm a 47-year-old woman who doesn't have any of the characteristics of that girl that came in here. Now, some of that is obviously because I'm not a teenager anymore. Really. I'm a grown-up, sort of. In a grown-up's body, anyways, right? But, you know, somewhere along the line, I was given this incredible gift. And I don't know where it happened or when it happened, but virtually any experience of any kind that anybody has, I can find some positive in. And I don't know where that came from. I do. It came from God, I'm sure. But I don't know how I got that. I honestly believe with every ounce of my being that God has my back. And that whatever is supposed to happen is what's going to happen no matter what I do. As long as I continue to practice the principles in all my affairs, as long as I continue to feed my conscious contact, as long as I continue to do what I have done before, I will continue to grow in this program and I can be happy, joyous, and free, just like it's promised to me in the big book. You don't just get that. You gotta work for it. But once you get it, keeping it is really easy. You just gotta do a few simple things. You know, I said early on that there were a lot of people in this room that I know are in this room just because I'm standing up here at the podium today, and I really want to thank you for that. And that's the fellowship. That's the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have been blessed with the most incredible people in my life. Part of that is because I've been active, and so I've met a lot of people. I just love this program, and I'm willing to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, I've always been one that will, anybody needs anything, I'm right there to help you. I'll do whatever anybody needs. And I still feel that way, and I will still do that. But right now, I'm the one that needs. And 2 years ago, I was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer. And in January of this year, I was told to put my affairs in order. And I'm not done yet. I'm like, you know, whatever God's plan is what it is, but I'm not done yet. So I'm just going to keep living every day to its fullest. Because the reality is that just because I have stage 4 breast cancer does not mean that I am going to be the first person in this room to pass away. God has a plan for every one of us, and none of us knows what it is. So if I live as though I'm dead, I'm not going to live anymore. So I live as though I have infinite time left. But I was completely overwhelmed at the people that have been there for me over the last 2 years and continue to be there for me today. And that's not because of anything I did. That's because of what God did. That's because I allowed God to work in my life. I put in the footwork that's asked of me in the steps. And I was given this gift. And it's very humbling to stand back and say, wow, look at all these people that love you. And most of us don't get that opportunity to see. If you just keep being positive and working the program, I've heard before, if I would have wrote down what I wanted, I would have shortchanged myself. I can't even tell you how true that is, particularly today. There is so much love in this room that I feel like I could go run a marathon when really I need to just sit down. So I want to thank you guys all for listening to me tonight. Come out.
Julie, for coming out tonight. Great message. We love you. We only have one comment at this meeting, and ask Dan to give a comment.
Well, I'm Dan, an alcoholic.
Hi, Dan.
You know, and I remember when Julie moved here. God, seriously, I was at the Harbor Creek meeting, and I'm like, who is that? Oh, my God. Is there a possibility of her moving back to Buffalo? And I was like, you know, and then I didn't see her for a while because she was going back to school. Because she didn't talk about all the things that she did. Okay, this is a person who took charge of her life in sobriety, and we have a lot in common because we both went back to school in sobriety, and we both continued. And she continued through her education and continued working even when she wasn't feeling well because she wanted to reach some goals in life, and that's because of what she's done in this book. Now, I heard somebody recently, a lot of people have been talking about, you know, you hear it out there, because everybody, we all know that Julie's sick. But there's people who are saying, like, oh my God, she's so active, I'm thinking, where the hell have you been? She's been here the whole time.
Yep.
She's been doing this for 20 years here. She does this, and this is what she's been doing all along. You know, I seen it. That's why we became friends. Because I liked what I saw in her. You know, I got a job. She gave me a job in Cincinnati. We're down by a lake at in front of our wedding, and we're dying for this wedding, and we both came from different directions and met there. We're back there. And we really, I knew her, we didn't know her that well, but she said to me, you know, and she was talking about relationships. And when we heard from her, she doesn't have a real good picker. And she gave me a responsibility that day that man, probably the hardest job I've ever had. She says, you're in charge of my relationships. And I was like, what? Yeah, before I could go out with anybody, I had to run it by you. Wow, that's a lot of responsibility there. You know, and to watch this relationship she's in now and how it's grown and how it's developed and how it's become this team. You know, there's something that a lot of people know. I have a little saying in my life. It's called, not everybody in my life can be my foxhole. You know, because in a foxhole, we're defending each other. We're looking out. If your person in there is not reliable, if they're going to go to sleep, they're going to do something wrong, they're not going to do their job, we're all dead. See, I knew when I met Julie that she could be my foxhole. And I'm grateful that she's a friend of mine today. Thanks.